It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, it's the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People will ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to, are they going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
I am not what you might consider an AI hater. I think if you look deeply at it, there's a lot to appreciate about the change it will do for the world. However, it's a threat, and it's also easy to make fun of when you see things like this from Twitter on the Connor Hellebuck wants trade to Buffalo Sabres amid Jets talks item under today's news. Buffalo GM Kevin Adams seeks goalie stability. You need people too, right? We need Paul. Paul's here for it. I mean, Paul has you have a tough enough time with actual people, mostly actual real people on Twitter, not to, you know, get as far afield as the AI stuff, Paul. I mean, I don't want to make things more complicated for you.
Yeah, you know me well enough. I'm probably never going to really get into AI. That's just not my thing, especially when that what you just said happens. I mean, yes, Kevin Adams reportedly is now a member of the Boston Bruins organization. But,
yes.
Yeah, so I'm just much, much more careful now. You know, what I read, is it true, is it not? Especially on Facebook, a lot of that stuff is not true, a lot of it.
I'll take your word for that.
Yeah, because what I do is Facebook is for friends, like I went to school with. It's fun to get in, talking to people I went to high school with and stuff. I don't have any listeners or viewers on Facebook, and then Twitter is for viewers and radio people. So that's the way I usually split it.
The line you're drawing, very well.
Yes.
Well, we'll get to Krebs and whatever else, but it's been a couple of weeks since you and I have spoken, and I'm building on the premise again still that the Sabres kind of want Connor Hellebuck. Here we are, July 13th, and there is, whether this is from AI or not, I don't think it entirely is, more speculation about it. And I just feel, Paul, that the Sabres might be trying to wait the Jets out, that the goalie wants to be moved, and the Jets are trying to do the best they can, and it's a poker game between the two teams, if not other teams as well. How do you see it?
Well, there's no question in my mind that Jarmo Kekäläinen is not going to pay the price that needs to be paid right now to do it, if he wanted to do it today. If that stays the price, I don't feel it'll be done. And then you have other things that fall into it. Is Winnipeg on Lukanen's new no trade, which kicked in on July 1st? We don't know. You would think he would be part of the trade if, you know, they got Hellebuck. Norris also was in that situation. He had one kick in on July 1st also. So, yeah, I'm very confident in saying the price of Hellebuck today will not be paid by the Buffalo Sabres. And he has gone on his out of his way twice now, for whatever his reasons might be, saying that it's a pretty good chance they're going with the three goalies they went with last year. He was happy with them. Really, if you look at, save percentage, the Buffalo Sabres, I believe they were third in the league, if I'm not mistaken, second or third. I believe it was third in the league in save percentage as a group with the three of them. That's not too bad. You know, and they went on a heater from December 9th on, basically till the end of the season, where Lukanen's save percentage was on top of the league for a lot of that time. So it's not – and you look at the two goalies, Lukanen was better than Hellebuck last year. But then you got to say to yourself, was this just a one-year thing for Hellebuck? Did he just have a bad year? You know, and it's a one-off, and he'll be back to being Hellebuck again next year. Who knows? None of us know that. None of us can predict that. But I think you're taking an awfully big chance getting a goaltender that had a bad year last year, who in the last 3 years of the playoffs is, let me see if I can remember this, 8-15, I believe, somewhere in there. I think I might be a game or two off, but right there. And goals against almost 4 and a save percentage, I believe, under .870 in the playoffs. So, and one of those years, you won the President's Trophy.
Yeah.
Again. Now, there are examples of guys who did not perform in the playoffs and then all of a sudden did and won Stanley Cups. One just left the Florida Panthers and is now the Toronto Maple Leafs goaltender. He never had any success in the playoffs, and then he did. These are all questions none of us know. Jarmo Kekalainen doesn't know, you know, if he can all of a sudden become a playoff goaltender, if last year was just an outlier and he'll be back to being his old self again next year, or is he slipping? But an $8.5 million bet on your salary cap, to me, is an awfully large price to pay to find out.
Well put. If you were Kekalainen, would you just bail and be like, hey, sorry, guys, this isn't going to work? Would you go that far?
I'm being honest with you. I wouldn't have been in on it to start.
So, yes.
I really don't think goaltending was the Sabres' major problem. At times, I suppose it was. But even in the playoffs, I know both Lucan and Lyon got pulled, and they both played very, very well through a lot of the playoffs, too. I will disagree with – I disagree with it. That last goal was Lukanen's fault. It dipped on him. And the shooter said so. The puck went up on end. That made it a flutter puck, and the puck dipped. You can see it dip under his glove. I do not blame him at all for that glove.
Paul, you were a hockey player. Doesn't it make you want to ask yourself, shouldn't all shooters wait until the puck turns on end before shooting?
Isn't that better?
Wouldn't it work? No, it is better.
It does work because the puck will do goofy things for you. No question about that. It definitely will do goofy things for you when that happens. Now, you can't really get it to happen. It kind of has to happen naturally for you, for the puck to stand up on end like that. Yeah, it's called a flutter puck, and it's a very difficult play for a goaltender. And you can see his glove was right where the puck was going to go, and then it wasn't as the puck dipped. So, yeah, do I blame him for the goal that's scored from the red line? Yes. And I seen Dominic Hasek get scored on from the red line. Not trying to tell you Lukanen is Dominic Hasek in any way, shape, or form, but I've seen the best there are get scored on from the red line. It happens. It's the only time I've ever seen him get scored on from the red line. It just happened, and you move on.
I think Lukanen, as I said earlier, is a really pivotal piece of this if there is a negotiation between the teams, because the Sabres can't really trade for Connor Hellebuyck without moving Lukanen. Like, they just won't need him anymore, and they need cap room if they were to do this. Would he be a player as wild and wacky as goaltending performance is in the league? We've learned that lesson. Is he somebody that if you're Winnipeg, you could sell? Like, this is the Sabres and Hasek a little bit. There are other examples mm-hmm. where you're trading your franchise piece because you just don't think you can really make it work anymore. Team results, player needs. Is Lukanen somebody that if you're Winnipeg, you could sell?
Well, Lukanen and Skinner, they're your goaltenders. They already have one. They would get the other.
And Skinner's tough.
Yeah,
I mean, he's a tough sell.
There's times he's really good, and there are times he's really not. You know, and right now with two extra guys on the roster, I have the Sabres at a little over $4.2 million in salary cap, which means they would have to double that if they were going to make this trade.
Yep.
Lukanen would open up 4.7, so that would have 8.9. Just Lukanen taking off would open up enough room to do it if you did nothing else. So, and again, is Winnipeg on Lukanen's no trade? He doesn't have that many clubs that it's on his no trade. But and it just kicked in on July 1st. And if Kekalainen really, really wanted to do this deal and Lukanen was going to be part of it, he knows if Winnipeg is on that list or not. And he knows that as of July 1st, it will make it – you're going to have to get his permission if you want to make the trade. So, you know, it seems like from a Sabre standpoint, it's kind of dead. But I think maybe part of that reason is because the price has not come down, and in order for it to be rekindled, the price is going to have to come down.
Paul Hamilton on the Wester Hotline. Well, one other possible leverage piece in this negotiation, again, if there is one, is adding to the Sabres, really, I mean, to say, put it mildly, depth at forward, is the settlement with Peyton Krebs today. 4 years at $4.5 million. That's a pretty healthy number. Do the Sabres have, can you ever have one too many anythings? Like, are they at a point at forward where if they want to deal with Winnipeg, that would have to be where they turn? And might they think that whether it's goaltending or even defense, probably not defense, they're pretty well loaded, is it maybe optimal if they can pull off something they like to move a forward?
They have five full lines right now. With 23 players, you're going to have the extra goalie, the extra defenseman, and probably one extra forward. So you're looking at getting rid of two. You can take the easy way out. Now, you're going to have a fan revolt if you do, but Oslin and Hellenius do not charge you waivers. They can both go down and until there's an injury or something like that. Then Kozak's your extra forward or Danforth, and you're ready to go. That's not what I would do, but they could do that without a problem, and then they would be down to their 23 players. And what kind of injuries are you going to get at training camp? I mean, it would be shocking if in the first game these same guys are all healthy that we're talking about right now. So, you know, what kind of injuries are going to happen in training camp? Are you going to get two injuries where, you know, you got two guys on the IR, you know, to start the year? That's what you need, is two guys on the IR. Now, you know, are they still looking at a Kane acquisition to help the power play? That would be why you would do that. A guy with 2 goals and 17 assists and 19 points on the power play. And then you just ask yourself, would you rather have Quinn or would you rather have Kane in your top nine, so to speak?
Easy call.
Yeah, it is for me.
It is for me, Quinn.
Quinn did become a 20-goal scorer this past year. And it seemed like as the season went on, he was starting to find the areas to get in, to let that great shot that he has to get it off and get it into the net. So, you know, he has not helped the power play. Nothing has really helped the power play. It was middle of the road for a lot of the year. I think it wound up like 18th or 19th. But when you look at it, Lindy Ruff, in his 8 years he was away from the Sabres, his power play was only good once. You know, so... It's, you know, when we're talking with the Dallas Stars and with New Jersey, I can actually tell you. He was fourth in the league with Dallas once. With New Jersey, he was 13th twice and 28th twice. The other 3 years in Dallas, he was 12th, 20th, and 23rd. This 2 years in Buffalo, he's 24th and 20th. So Lindy Ruff really has never put together since he left the first time, and those numbers I haven't looked up yet and plan on it. But has basically run a power play as a coach in the last 10 years. It runs around 19%.
That's tough when you have the players they have. I mean, even mm-hmm. Paterka two seasons ago, right? I mean, just you have shooters, you have playmakers. I want to think there's, like anything with hockey or anything in life, there's some randomness in it, but it'd be nice to be able to flip that next year. Paul, so a couple things just so that you're up to speed. World Cup, we're down to four teams.
We are.
France?
I wouldn't have guessed that.
You thought it was maybe a long left? A lot of teams still left?
That's a good way to put it. A lot. I wouldn't have been able to know how many.
I can't believe this thing isn't. You can't believe it's close to the end. It's a week
exactly.
away. Sunday
exactly.
Sunday is it. Sunday, your long national nightmare, international nightmare is over. So France and Spain tomorrow, England and Argentina Wednesday, both afternoon games, then Sunday is the final.
Any of those upsets to be in the top four?
No, in fact, thank you for asking this. In fact, they are the top four ranked teams in the world, and that has never happened before in the World Cup, where the top four, very chalky, made the semifinals. So
this is a tournament that you could have made some money by going with the favorites, where normally you can't make
yes.
any money doing that.
This is basically like 4-1 seeds in the NCAAs making the Final Four, pretty much. And also, I think you probably know this one, but I'm not sure. I can't take anything for granted with you. Tonight is Home Run Derby.
I thought that was tomorrow night. So, yeah, you can't take that for granted.
Tomorrow night is the All-Star Game. Tonight
I was one day off. I was thinking they were giving them a day to get there, and then tomorrow's Home Run Derby, and the next day is the All-Star Game. So
no, Philadelphia. I was in the Philadelphia area all weekend, and a lot of hype about this week. You have two Phillies in Home Run Derby, Schwarber and Harper. Mm-hmm. And you have Ben Rice, Paul. What a find for the Yankees.
And I did see a Philly is going to be the starting pitcher, too.
Wheeler? No, he just pitched. Sanchez. Got to be Sanchez, right?
Yeah, now what's his name? The young kid from the Yankees is not going to pitch because he just pitched a day or two ago.
Schlittler.
Yeah, he's going to. Oh, I love watching him pitch. Luckily, that game I went to earlier this season where I froze, he was pitching. I loved it.
Where you froze?
It was before the Ranger game in April. We flew there, and I got there. Aren't the Yankees playing? Yeah, they're playing the A's. it was 39 degrees. I froze to death, but it was well worth it. And he was pitching, and I really enjoyed. It's almost to me like appointment TV when he pitches. I always like to watch him pitch.
I love that about you. I am the same way. What's better than a great pitcher or a great pitching matchup when you have an evening for baseball? If you're lucky enough to have all the games, find me the best pitcher on the card. Dylan Cease, I believe, will start for the American League, which is ironic because Toronto is in Canada.
And I had all the people around me laughing because Leiter now pitches for the Oakland A's, and the A's were winning rather large. He comes in, it gives up like 5 runs before there's even an out, and I said out loud, I go, that's the best he's pitched for the Yankees ever. And he was pitching for the A's.
It's the Mike Torres line, Paul.
The fans around me just cracked up when I blurted that out. And the Yankees did wind up winning the game thanks to Leiter.
It's the Mike Torres line. When he was a Yankee in 77 and then went to the Red Sox in 78, gave up the Bucky Dent home run, they said how Torres pitched the Yankees to the World Series 2 years in a row.
I had never heard that one.
On that note, we'll keep in touch this week. Thank you.
And quickly, you'll want to know my baseball trip this year is Atlanta.
Oh, interesting. I want to hear about it. When is that soon?
End of August.
Okay, so no. We'll talk about it because I've never been to Atlanta, so I'll wait to hear all about it. Thank
Looking
you, Paul.
Looking forward to it. Yep.
Very good. Paul Hamilton's appearances on WGR brought to you by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. Sal coming up at 4. No Bulldog this week. He is puttering around his apartment, having a great old time. I'm Mike Shope, and this is WGR.
Macalister libre! Macalister palo otra vez! Iba Messi! Primero, Spence! Maca! Messi! Engancha y va, tiró con la derecha. ¡Gol! ¡Gol! ¡Gol!
¡Gol! Andres Cantor, he's running out of voice.
They were under siege.
That man has lost his voice because the team that he keeps calling here is scoring every goal in like the last minute.
Yeah.
And he's got to yell at the top of his lungs every other day.
It's
for
a good,
Argentina.
It's a good thing there are only like, you know, 3 goals in a game. He's Argentine, and I remember
Cantor. Yeah.
When they won it last year, he's like crying, getting emotional because they'd won the World Cup.
Yeah.
And here they are back in the final again. Scenes, an absolute masterclass in how not to finish out a game from England, as they had a 1-0 lead and went into complete park the bus, all your defensive subs, let, you know, the greatest player of all time throw crosses into your box relentlessly. And also the first goal for Argentina, like, I'm no soccer tactician, but nobody near that guy to close him out as Bellingham tries to get out there in time.
Wow, they were all at Messi, right?
Right. Yeah,
they had. Did they have 3 guys on Messi? Where was Dan Byrne, Joe Yernan, Mr. Newcastle?
Yeah,
Dan Byrne?
How about it, Joe? We know you got the chops to talk about this before we get to the Sabres. Were you watching?
Oh, I was absolutely watching. I've been every game Andres Cantor has called, especially the Argentina games, are must listen. Even though I can make out about 10% of the words, my rudimentary high school and year of college Spanish instruction not really coming through for me. But man, I mean, just listening to that call again, it gives you like goosebumps and makes you feel warm. It's just such an insane but also great call. I loved it. But yeah, Dan Byrne, man, he's the closer. He's been the closer for England, and you know, they just got overwhelmed. They just threw everybody up the middle, and Dan Byrne's one man. He's 1'5" man, but he's just one man.
Yeah, one large man. Well, it's tough.
Yes.
It's tough for England for sure. I mean, we had opened the show talking about it this way, Joe. You're a Lions fan, right? I know this about you. You're a Newcastle fan. You've had your share of heartbreak, and I feel like maybe different sports fans operate from a different spot. The question we asked to open the show was, when you see something like that, if you have no major rooting interest, do you feel bad for England, or do you kind of laugh at what they're going through?
boy, with no rooting interest, because I really don't care for English football. I think it's just too much hype. It's too much. It's too much everything, honestly. And it's just kind of like, oh, all right. Because it's like, well, I'll let them win one and then they'll get over it. It's like, no, they'll be even worse than they are when they're crying and moping about all this stuff. But when I've got no rooting interest, I think it makes me feel sick in the gut. Cause you're just like, oh, those poor guys, you know, the poor guys, what a letdown, what a awful defeat. But, a game like that where it's, you know, a brilliant superstar like Messi, who's just so fun to watch. Never mind, like the rest of the Argentine team. Whatever to them. But England, I mean, there's a lot of likable guys on there, but there's so many guys where it's just like, ugh, get that guy out of here, please. You know. Mm-hmm. Watching it, I don't know. It's a tough watch, but man, if you have no interest in that game at all, and you're just watching it as sport, you're probably heartbroken for how that happens to how that happens in England.
Yeah, I find myself feeling very bad for people that have to go through terrible sports heartbreak, especially if they care a lot. You know, you won't find me getting too upset for a team like Vegas or a team like the Florida Panthers, maybe, if they lose in heartbreaking fashion. But like when Edmonton loses in Game 7, I feel for sports fans that like it, you know, that care quite a bit. Joe Yerden on the Western Hotline, he of NotedHockey.com and contributor at Bleacher Report. Got him on to talk a little about the Sabres here. Joe, I'll ask you the question. I asked this to Brian Koziel a little bit earlier. It's kind of a quick Hellebuck conversation. How much smoke to the idea that Connor Hellebuck is not featured in any one of the 11 pictures in the Winnipeg Jets Instagram to note the start of the schedule and their schedule announcement? And Joe found they haven't tweeted about Hellebuck since his birthday in May.
Yeah, May 19th.
It's enough to make everybody into Charlie Day at the board with the conspiracies, isn't it?
Yes.
It's enough to come up with a bunch of like, all right, this is putting it together here. It seems crazy to read into that, but I don't know. You kind of have to, don't you?
It's 11 pictures. There's no way that's not an accident.
he's the biggest player on the team. You know, I mean, it's no knock on Mark Scheifele or Kyle Connor or any of those guys, but like, Hellebuck's like the guy. Like, he's the man, and like, that's the guy you put front and center on any marketing you do. And nothing since May. Nothing about the season opener. I don't know.
Yeah.
To me, that's a lot. And it kind of tells me that, like, they're just playing it cautious. Like, hey, maybe he's not going to be here. We don't want any awkward tweets. We don't want any, you know, cold sports takes coming at us. You know, like, hey, come see Connor Hellebuck opening night. Oops, nope, he's not going to be here unless, you know, Buffalo is here or some other team's here that, you know, that might happen to be here. But that's enough for me to be like, huh, all right, so where's he going? And you know, at that point, the only dots we have to connect are with Buffalo. And I don't know, I've always been of the mind that it's a much harder trade to make after the draft, but I still think it's a trade that you can make. I still think there are pieces you can put together to make that trade happen if you want to. It's just, you know, I mean, if Kevin Cheveldayoff wasn't going to give up number 8 to swap with 4 at the draft, it's like, I wonder how much tougher it is now when, you know, maybe the goalie that he wants probably won't waive his no trade to go there. And, you know, maybe some other players are in a different spot. So, yeah.
How much do you think the Sabres really want this move? It's been reported that the two have been talking for, of course, like weeks, and then it dies at the draft, and maybe it kicks back up. It goes back to early June. The report, Hellebuck says he wants to go to Buffalo. What level of interest do you think the Sabres have in getting it done, or how far along the way they might have gotten it done?
I think Yarmo's in a place of comfort, because if he doesn't, you know, if this trade doesn't happen, I think they're very comfortable with the setup they've got in goal with the guys they have. I think they're very comfortable with that. But if they can upgrade on that and also not give up everybody they think they're going to need to be able to make a run at the cup, then I think that's a trade that can be made. But you know, if Winnipeg is being really hard about, and they should be really hard about the guys that they want in return, then, you know, maybe that's something that can't happen. But I mean, if it's the kind of thing where you know, maybe behind the scenes, there's an urgency from maybe from Hellebuyck to say like, hey man, just, you know, looking to do this as peacefully as possible. You know, let's get me out of here. Let's figure this out. If there's that kind of pressure, then you know, maybe things get a little bit easier to make a trade happen. But this is a deal I think that got a lot tougher to do after July 1st. But there's ways around it. There's ways to get by it, and I don't know if it's necessarily any more comfortable for either side to pull the trigger on that. All the same.
What do you think of the Luukkonen piece of it? He's got the 5-team no trade clause now. Should we just assume you think that he would just say, "Oh no, not Winnipeg"? Because the only argument you could make against that would be, well, if he wants to be a starter and it's not going to happen here because the Sabres are intent on getting Hellebuyck, most teams have made their moves. So how many teams out there would he kind of have the net?
You know, I think in his position, I think if you want to be a starter, then maybe you say like, okay, Winnipeg's not the most ideal place, but if I go there, I'm going to be the number one, or at least it's going to be a 1A, 1B situation that I'll take control of because the other guy's Stuart Skinner, and no offense to Stuart Skinner, who has played in a Stanley Cup final. Luukkonen's probably a better goalie. Now, if it's something where Luukkonen is just kind of like, no, that's a place I am adamant I am not going to go to because XYZ reasons. Then I mean he's well within his rights to do that. It's just he would have to realize that he's not the number one anymore, and he's not going to play as often. And you know maybe you're content with that because you're still making $4.5 million for the next few years, and that's a problem. That's something for the team to figure out how they want to deal with that, but. But if I'm him and I want to play, then, you know, maybe I say yes, but I mean, there's at least one guy there that he knows. I mean, he knows, Isaac Rosane, but I mean, it's the kind of thing where if I'm him, I'm probably a bit mad if they're trying to urge me to say yes to that or seeing my name in trade rumors and everything, I'm probably going to have a pretty big chip on my shoulder no matter what, when camp starts.
Right,
wherever camp starts.
Yeah, that like, does he have any different sort of mentality or attitude because the whole offseason has kind of been, are the Sabres getting a different goalie to replace you? I mean, I wonder if the Sabres couldn't make it known, though, like, this isn't really an indictment on him. It's just this is the best goalie in the world. That's the only reason we're even talking about goalie, and if he wasn't available, we wouldn't be even looking at this position.
Yeah, I think you can read between the lines on that. I mean, you know, I think if I'm Luukkonen and if my name's getting thrown in there to be the guy moved to get, you know, a 3-time Vezina MVP goalie, maybe future Hall of Famer, then yeah, I'm feeling pretty flattered about that. But all the same, I don't want to leave because moving stinks and, you know, it's a new team, new situation, and maybe a city you don't want to be in. I think that's a reason to be mad about it. But I think other than that, it's, you know, it's something where, you know, you can take motivation out of that very, very clearly. I mean, you can take motivation out of, hey, team wants to move me. It doesn't matter who it's for. They want to move me, but all right, I'll show them. You know, I think honestly, Luukkonen has done really well in those situations where, you know, the doubt side of the scale weighs a lot heavier. And I think he's been able to really show what he can do in those kinds of situations. But this is a different kind. This is a whole different kind of, like, it's not doubt. It's just there's an elite goalie out there that we can get. And you're, you know, one of the guys that could help make that happen. Maybe not now, but it's a different kind of wrinkle to this whole thing, just because it's, you know, and I don't know that any, you know, this has ever happened with other guys that were traded for elite goalies in the past, goalie for goalie anyways. But, you know, I don't know if it's something I would necessarily be mad about that half of it. I think I'd be more mad about it in that, hey, they asked me to waive. I'm saying no. Or, I mean, we don't know if that's happened or not. But if this talk is out there, then, you know, if they bring that question to me, it's going to be a very interesting conversation.
Joe Yurden, NotedHockey.com and Bleacher Report. Joe, how about the Patrick Kane chatter? Chris Chelios flat out says, I talk to him, it's between Chicago and Buffalo, and we're constantly here talking about how they have too many forwards of the same caliber. Like, is there room for Kane? And if so, if that's like maybe on the table for him to say yes or no, I feel like a follow-up move would be necessary because they're, well, overflowing. Is that too far to say that at the position?
No, I think that's pretty accurate. They're at, what, 15, 16 forwards right now? To me, in my mind, the Kane thing is if the Hellebuck trade does happen, you're probably looking at a couple of forwards from on the rot, you know, one of those, two of those 15 guys, maybe even three, going back the other way. And then it's like, oh, shoot, we need a guy. Well, Patrick's on the line waiting to sign that one-year deal. Let's get it done. The other side of that, though, is maybe you've got your depth chart on the board and you're looking at it going like, boy, we have some question marks about X guy, Y guy, and Z guy. And also, how are we going to, how is our power play going to get set up for this, with no Tuck? And you're looking at this and going like, boy, how's this going to work now? And then maybe you're saying like, well, boy, Patty Kane can still help on a power play really well. He was really good at that in Detroit. And he can really help offensively, just, have some guys that can kind of cover his tail on the defensive side of the game, and we can go from there. But then you're talking about, what, two, maybe three guys going to Rochester to make that happen, and it's probably two or three guys nobody wants to see you go to Rochester at this point, or you'd like to get in the lineup more regularly right away after watching them in the playoffs. I think that's kind of what you're looking at, because you start thinking about like how this is going to set up when you get in training camp and everything. And because the guys that would go to Roch are kind of easy to pick out right now, at least the guys that are easy to move, you don't have to worry about waivers or any of that. Obviously you could do anything that you want to in camp and hope that it works. But to me, this seems like the kind of thing where it's like, hey, if Hellebuck gets done, get Kane on the line immediately, and let's get him in here and get it squared away.
Right, because if not, like, it's easy to do it just because no one has to go through waivers. But is it easy for Lindy and whoever's putting the lineup together? Because some of these young guys that are not don't have to go through waivers are maybe top six guys in your lineup when the year begins. Yeah. The only guy I wonder with that is Kulik, and if would they hide behind, well, this isn't just about, a numbers game. We also want to get him a couple of games on the ice before we, send him for full bore in the NHL lineup.
Yeah, but even something like that might keep him out of Buffalo for like, what, a week, 2 weeks tops.
Right.
And then you're trying to dance around things, and because right now you're thinking like it would be him, Oslin and Helenius, and it was such a crap storm last year when Oslin went down, and Lindy was just like, well, if it's up to me, he's never leaving. And it's like, okay, all right, well, what happens in training camp if you've got 17 forwards and one of them's Patrick Kane, who came here for, who you signed for a very specific reason, and you've got a whole lineup of all these vet guys, and you're just like, how do we make this work? And it's like, well, there's only one way to do it, and some of these guys have got to go to Roch. Now, Roch would be really happy. They would love to have any of those guys back to start next season. But to have that kind of crowded house, and Lord help us all if they get out of the gate slowly and they're not scoring goals, because, boy, oh, boy, the screaming about getting those guys back from Roch would be deafening. But you want to say it's a nice problem to have, but I don't know, man. It's with the questions about, how the offense is going to click with Tuck gone and all that. It's a lot of stuff where it's like you got a lot of balls in the air you're trying to juggle, and you better be focused.
Joe Yerden, NotedHockey.com. Joe, be ready, be on alert. Joe's off tomorrow. I don't know if big things happen when Joe's off or when I'm off. I've got time off next week, so we are entering an era, or a window at least, where maybe there's a Hellebuck trade with one of us off, so be prepared.
Well, yeah, I get thinking back to when Skinner got traded to Buffalo, and that was like, what, the first week of August?
Yeah.
And we were all wait, what?
Yeah.
Everybody's on break. What are we doing? Like, what's happening here? And then, so we're in that point of the year where everybody's, management guys, I don't know if they're back from the cottage and they're just starting gear up or what's going on. I don't even know what's happening. I just assume everybody's at the pool someplace.
Is it not true, though, that this NHL calendar still looks different because Larkin, Robertson, Hellebuck, maybe even Werenski, like, you still don't have resolution on a lot of guys where, like, any of those four names I just listed, I wouldn't tell you right now whether they'll be on their teams at the beginning of the season or not.
Yeah, it's a little different, but, like, there's wrinkles to all of those things. You know, the Hellebuck thing, obviously, you know, with the social media pic, you know, his picture's not anywhere. The rumors haven't gone away since the draft. Larkin thing, well, Yzerman just got scooted upstairs, got fired from being the GM, and now they're on the GM watch in, you know, the middle of July. That's a huge change. And, you know, Robertson filed for arbitration. If that goes to an actual hearing, I mean, cool, he gets a contract done, but then, okay, that walks into free agency. Gear up for next summer. Like, let's go. But, you know, like, that's like a temporary stay of free agency right there, or move or something. But yeah, and I mean, Werenski seemed to walk back everything. I mean, Blue Jackets were having fun with that on social media. I thought that was great. But I don't know. Maybe that's what happens with Larkin now with Yzerman, you know, moving to a different role. Maybe Larkin says, like, okay, well, the guy I had an issue with isn't running the show anymore. So let's see how this goes. But I mean, I don't know. It feels like there's work still to be done, but some of these things, I don't know. I just wonder if it gets held off until, you know, maybe right before camp opens.
Mm-hmm. All right. Joe Yurden. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah. NotedHockey.com for Joe Yurden. Find his work there. His Substack and Bleacher Report contributor. NHL schedule today. The Sabres home opener was announced right after our show.
Mm-hmm.
So is the schedule 10 a.m. today?
I think I saw 1 o'clock somewhere.
Okay. They're not on Good Morning America telling us who's going to play.
That was so dumb when they did and then they didn't, like, have the names. They just had the pictures when they announced are you talking about when they announced the Olympic team?
No, I was talking about when the NFL goes on Good Morning America and Netflix, and this, you know, becomes a four-day event. The NHL's just like, here's the schedule.
Because hockey announced the Olympic team on Good Morning America, and they did like a – remember they did like a passing by camera shot on the roster, and the names were like in 12 font, so you couldn't read anything, and it was only 3 seconds long, and you had to wait like another 5 minutes, which was fine.
What's the status?
We're splitting season tickets this year with other guys. We're drafting games.
Yeah.
Does the opener go down at all because it was Chicago?
No.
In your order?
Absolutely not.
All right.
Opener is the number one pick for me all the time. First on my board. Opener.
And it is Saturday night.
Yeah.
Could have been a Thursday. I mean, the Sabres play in Columbus's home opener on a Thursday.
It's a nice little weekend. So. Saturday, Blackhawks to open the season, and then the next day is Bills Patriots.
Right. Yeah.
So a nice little 1-2.
And you get the banner raising.
Right.
It might widen the board a little bit, though, because you're not wasting, but there's value in, well, okay, I didn't get the opener. If I'm not going first, okay, but I could still get the first time they play Tampa. I could still get the first time they play Montreal. Because the opener was going to be the opener. I have the value of the banner and the first night in there regardless. And they might be playing a team that they could just beat by five. Ideally, it's hockey. You can never assume that.
But yeah.
No Bedard. Did they want Chicago because, like, they wanted Byram there? They don't care about that.
I don't think we need to place the NHL.
The NHL doesn't think that deeply.
It's kind of like the Premier League. The Premier League has the schedule come out, and you're like, what's what? Nobody cares. They just threw their, here's the schedule. What are you worried about?
Right.
In the NFL, we make it a big deal.
I thought, though, maybe they put some thought into it because there were other openers that felt like, okay, Carolina is playing Florida. Like, okay, I've got the defending Stanley Cup champion against the previous two Stanley Cup champions. And I had Montreal's playing somebody too. Tampa, maybe?
I thought there was some thought into
a couple of them.
Yeah, I thought the Buffalo-Chicago one might, if it's anything, it might be Kane. Because he's playing for one of those two teams, and it'll either be he's playing against Chicago, his old team, in Buffalo, or he's playing against his hometown team back with Chicago.
Sure. I mean, I just feel like we will end up finding what the answer could be for any team. This is like when people say, oh, yeah, the Bills are opening against the Lions because of Ralph.
Right.
Like, Maybe.
Or it's just a game.
Or it's just, yeah, they just picked this one. This is going to be the game.
Washington-Pittsburgh is an opener.
Okay.
You don't think they get that? They get to put input on who they want to open against?
Maybe. 803-0550. Buff, hang with us. We'll get your call on the other side on the Bills. And keep talking with you. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Jeremy and Joe on WGR.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, was the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to, are they going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Appreciate being reminded of that now that we know their first two games. I was sitting here thinking I would ask Paul to predict the outcomes, the scores even, of the October 1st game in Columbus and the October 3rd home opener against Chicago. But just to make sure, Paul, you're not going there, are you?
No, I'm not going there.
Too soon? Too early? maybe the day of, but probably not, right? We're not predicting hockey games. Fun to think of the Blackhawks for the opener, though, the home opener, right? I mean, that's happened a long time ago, but not a, you know, a conference opponent. And it's Bowen Byram on a Saturday night. You can start to look forward to that.
Yeah, I mean, they pretty much finished the year in Chicago. Right at the end of the year. Now they're going to start the year, start the home part of the year against Chicago. So Bo Byram it'll be a homecoming right away for he and Jordan Greenway. So we'll see how he feels about training camp and his new team when he gets here, and see what the Sabres will be all about then, and see if what we're looking at now is what we'll be looking at that night, or will we be looking at some other things?
Right, Greenway too. Paul, how much do you think the Sabres will miss Byram?
Quite a bit. I mean, the thing is, to have a guy, I mean, he is talented, and he was basically your number three or four defenseman, probably number four once Power really started to come into his own last year, and that was no insult to Byram. It's just who Buffalo has. And that's one thing Kekalainen talked about in his press conference at the end of the year, how, you know, he felt they had the best four in the NHL, and I could make that argument too.
Yeah.
As far as that went, so then that's really one of the biggest reasons he wanted to leave. He didn't want to be a number three or four defenseman on a team. He wanted to be a number one defenseman, and that was not going to happen here. It wasn't going to happen in Colorado either for him with Makar. So now he's in a place where it is going to happen for him, and you know, but he doesn't have a real good team around him. So I think his numbers aren't really going to come out real well unless the Blackhawks shock us and you know, become a very good team quickly. And you know, he's got some suffering ahead of him right now.
He got that money, though, like you talked about.
He got money.
he got his number one defenseman money, for sure. I mean, he might be tops in the league now at the position.
No, I never would have dreamed that he would have been able to get that. And, yeah, Quinn Hughes will surpass that without question. So, especially with the salary cap going up as much as it has, which tells us the NHL is doing quite well because that means revenues are going up.
Yeah, how about that?
At a big pace for the salary cap to go up at the pace that it's going up.
You know, we're only in the middle of this sort of new, exciting period in their history. You don't know how long it'll last. Hopefully it's not already the end of it. But, you know, it's the beginning of a stretch here where you'd like to think, by their roster and the ages of their players, that they could sustain success for several years here. I wonder how Byram, if that happens, I wonder how Byram will be remembered as a Sabre, as a part of the, you know, the team where they popped it, where they broke through. Because he was no small part of that. I mean, he, like you talked about, he wasn't Dahlin either, but he wasn't insignificant to the story here.
And he had a rough start this year. I mean, a lot of people point to his numbers this year, and I think part of that is before December when they got hot. He wasn't very good. It wasn't going well for him. And then he got really good and played well, as did the rest of the team. And they all just kind of gelled where it almost didn't matter which defensive pair was on the ice. The Sabres were giving up very few scoring chances. They weren't turning the puck over, you know, to produce those scoring chances against their goaltenders. Their goaltenders were, you know, their save percentage was number two or three in the NHL last year. And a lot of that is because they cut way down on the types of scoring chances that they were allowing. And Byram was a big part of that. He played a lot of penalty kill for them and eventually wound up on the number two power play for power. I mean, let's just face it. As a young defenseman, the power play is not working for Owen Power in the National Hockey League. I'm not saying it never will, but it just wasn't. And they recognized that finally and pulled him off it and gave Byram an opportunity, which, if we're all being honest, I don't think went real well either. But he'll be on the number one power play, I'm sure, in Chicago.
Paul Hamilton on the Wester Hotline. I'm Mike Shope, getting some hockey talk in. Bulldog is off this week. So we're just kind of like maybe now more back in our chairs with the idea of there being a big move coming from the Sabres. The farther we get into the summer, the less likely it would seem. But that doesn't have to be, you know, like it's not 0% or anything at this point. You know, thinking about Hellebuck again, Paul, and what the Sabres might have to give up to get him. Do you have an idea of like what you think he might take in a trade? Are we looking at three of these young pieces in your mind? Are we looking at even possibly the draft picks they just made? I don't know if it would ever get to that point, but what would you see a trade looking like?
Well, it sounds like, if reports are correct, and this would track with Kekalainen, it sounded like he just didn't want to give Winnipeg the fourth overall pick. It sounded like he wanted the eighth overall pick in return as part of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
And Winnipeg was going to, no, that's not going to happen. And then, you know, Winnipeg, you know, went a little too far. I think Mertka, fine, but we're not going to throw the number four pick and Hellenius in there, you know, type of a thing. And, you know, it was just a big ask. You know, Jack Quinn was involved in that also. And it was just a big ask. And it just appeared that, all right, now they want Hellenius. Nah, you know what? No, this is going to have to come down a little bit before we're interested if you're the Sabres. Now, that doesn't mean they still won't talk about it. They probably have. It sounds like they have. And but if the price doesn't come down, I would be shocked if that trade is made, especially since Kekalainen has said more than once that his goaltending, he's happy with his goaltending. And he's even indicated there's a pretty good chance they will run back the three goaltenders that they had because he liked them. And I've said, and I'll say it again, it wouldn't shock me if there's an injury to Lucan in their line, if all of a sudden Ellis took the bull by the horns here and wound up in their net. I mean, that wouldn't shock me at all. There are a lot of folks who think highly of Colton Ellis. And so if he gets an opportunity like Bussey did this year in Carolina, and that's, I don't know if I mentioned this to you or not, that makes me scratch my head, the reports that Carolina's in on Hellebuck. It's like, Bussey had a really, really good regular season. I mean, he came from nowhere off the waiver wire and played really, really well and put up really good numbers. And then when they needed him the most at the end of the Stanley Cup playoffs, he was fantastic. So I'm kind of scratching. And then you signed him to a contract. So why would you be interested in Hellebuck? You just won the cup with what you have. That's strange to me. I don't know why they would have an interest in that. Give up assets to get something that, I don't know, I just don't feel they need.
Not to mention Freddie Anderson, who got them to the finals, basically, you know, with a dominant playoff season as well.
He's gone, but they still have Bussey and the Russian kid, who they're high on, you know. So they're still in the, you know, they had three goaltenders. And he got into a little bit of the playoffs once it was Bussey and him, because they didn't dress Anderson as the backup because of his injury. So, I just wonder if that, how accurate that report is, because I don't understand, if you're Carolina, why would you be in on this?
Your Ellis point is interesting. I mean, for all the time I've spent talking about just how random goaltending is in terms of predictability, there's a guy that they liked well enough to keep him around all season. It was somewhat controversial, at least for a while, they're doing that. And so, yeah, I mean, if he's somebody that they're right in terms of projecting his talent, I mean, he'd have to get a chance, which probably means something is going wrong, whether that's an injury or something else. Not necessarily for him to get that chance, but if he were to, I wouldn't assume that he couldn't play well.
And, Mike, I think more and more teams are going to do it. You know, go with three goaltenders because of the e-bug rule. You have to have the e-bug, but, you know, you can have three goaltenders, which means you can do what the Sabres did twice this year when one of their goaltenders got hurt. Lukanen did it once and Lyon did it once, where they came down from the press box dressed. They couldn't sit on the bench, which I don't understand. Well, I don't know why they can't get on the bench, but they can't. But they can sit in the locker room ready to go if the goaltender that's in. That's the only way they can go in is if the second goaltender gets hurt, and then you can put him in. So they don't have to go to the e-bug, and I think more teams are going to do that now. From what I'm reading, we're going to see a lot more teams have three goaltenders because you don't want to get down to that e-bug, not that it happens all that often anyway. Yes, you're going to have one there for the visiting team. But, you know, if you've got your three goaltenders, so I think more are going to do it. And maybe the thing I liked about Ellis is he could sit there for a month and be ready to play. I mean, he would stay after practice and work on things that players wanted to work on or he wanted to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it was long periods of time in between starts, and he'd start and win the game, you know. And I thought, well, there's a kid that keeps himself ready and keeps himself ready to go, and this is his first NHL season. Then I see what Bussey does, and he came to Carolina the same exact way off waivers in the beginning of the year, and he got his opportunity, and look what happened. So, you know, I'm not saying it's definitely going to happen. All I'm saying is it wouldn't surprise me at all if it did.
What do you think about Quinn as a piece in a trade offer involving Hellebuck or, I suppose, anyone else? I mean, we'd all maybe have different rankings of the young players and just like how willing you might be or you think the Sabres might be in disposing them. None of that will be easy if it comes to it. Is Quinn for me is one of the more obvious ones where, I mean, I appreciate his talent, but I'd have an easier time letting go of him than certain others.
Absolutely. No, there's no question. I would get rid of him before Östlund or Helenius or even some of the guys who we haven't even seen sign contracts yet. And Jerry Fortin said something the other day, which is very true. If you don't keep stocking the cupboards as you go along, it will hit you rather quickly. So, yeah, people say, well, you got a lot of these prospects. Well, yeah, you can use them for trades. You've got a lot of them, and we know they all can't be in Sabre uniforms, but you might need something at a trade deadline or now if there's a player. You know, let's say all of a sudden Dylan Larkin says he would come to Buffalo. Okay, it's going to take some of these guys then that you've got stocked in college hockey or up in junior or over overseas or wherever they happen to be. And Jerry Fortin, he's very, very good at judging talent. And I found that out when he was an assistant coach at Niagara. And Niagara would wind up with players that I'm sitting there going, how is this player not at Wisconsin or North Dakota? You know, he would get these blue-chip guys that you wonder how he got them. But, you know, and then Niagara would wind up in the NCAA tournament, or they would upset some. They had some pretty big upsets along the way back when I was doing hockey there, and Jerry Fortin was there. And he showed me how he really has a good eye for talent, and I think, you know, he's done that with the Sabres too and now is in charge of their drafts.
Steve Yzerman, Paul, sort of resigns. I mean, he's going up, not down, but that didn't work out, Detroit.
Yeah, I'm not kind of buying that. That is, in my estimation, this is my opinion, one of the best players in Detroit Red Wings history, and we're going to try to not embarrass him as much as we can. So let's call it a resignation or whatever. So, you know, if he doesn't have another job somewhere else, then we'll just use him as an advisor. But how much is he actually going to be advising? So, yeah, that's just understanding what the type of player he is in Detroit Red Wings history, and we just don't want to throw him out the door.
Mm-hmm.
But the timing of it is interesting.
I mean, you've let him go through the draft.
It's late.
And free agency and, you know, whatever trades might be there. And now the question in my mind is, does that change Dylan Larkin's mind at all? Because there was credible reporting out there that Dylan Larkin and Yzerman did not see eye to eye on things. And that was part of what this is about. So now that Steve Yzerman isn't in charge, is it possible Dylan Larkin might say, okay, he might wait to see who is in charge and say, you know what, maybe I like the direction this is headed in now and rescind the trade request. So we'll see how this goes down and if it changes anything for Dylan Larkin.
Or perhaps Yzerman couldn't get him moved or wasn't willing, and we're going to have somebody else take the wheel on that. So we'll see.
Jason Botterill, he wasn't willing to purge his hockey department, and that cost him his job because it was just I don't even know if it was a month where Kim Pegula had said Jason Botterill was staying back and everything, yeah. And I don't even think it was a month earlier. And the next thing you know, Terry Pegula and Kim Pegula are sitting at a press conference saying we do not believe we were being heard. And that's when Kevin Adams was hired, and he purged the hockey department. Now, I will give Kevin Adams credit. It was a huge – a lot of people lost their jobs. But Kevin Adams realized rather quickly we went too far. I mean, the guy that left today, Jeremiah Crow, he was in charge of amateur and pro scouting. That's too big of a job for one person. It just is, especially an inexperienced at the time person. And Kevin Adams realized that and said, we got to change this. I mean, we went too far here. We got to start getting some people back in the organization, and they did. So I'll give him credit for that, to realize that this went too far and convincing Terry Pegula that it went too far.
And now we have John Davidson, Paul.
Yeah. Yeah, he's an advisor. It sounds like he has the same role with the Sabres as Kevin Adams has with the Bruins. So he's a senior advisor and somebody that Kekalainen is very familiar with in Columbus. And I think Davidson might have been the one that fired Kekalainen, wasn't he?
Maybe. Yeah, they were there together for a bit, so maybe.
There are no hard feelings there. Otherwise, Kekalainen wouldn't have brought him in, and maybe Kekalainen felt I didn't get the job done. So maybe, you know, he was well-founded to do it or whatever, but whatever, if there was any problem, it's been healed, and they are now together again.
Paul, stay indoors today.
I still have a lot of stuff to do outside. I may still get out there yet. I haven't been out there yet.
Okay.
So we'll see.
It's rebel.
Yeah, it's not like I obviously see the smoke now, but I've never like smelled it or it's never bothered me, you know, when we've had this the past couple of years from the wildfires up in Canada, but my bushes look like nobody lives here, and my lawn's getting a little bit long. So, and I'm thinking the sun's not going to be beating on me, so maybe it's not as hot as it could be.
All right. Well, good luck out there, Paul, if you risk it out there. Thanks for your time today.
No problem. Nice talking to you. Take care.
Paul Hamilton on the West Shore Hotline. His appearance is brought to you by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. I'm not even sure the sun point holds. It might still be... I don't know. I'm going to say something and then it's going to sound like I really know this, but isn't it maybe one of those deals where the rays are still like reaching you, but you just can't see them or something? Are you still maybe at risk sun-wise? Anyway, I don't know. I'm just filling time. Ryan Paganetti coming up in 15 minutes here on WGR.
Our Sabres beat reporter Paul Hamilton joining us here. We had a good run of Sabres news yesterday. Not only the Peyton Krebs contract extension, a trade, small trade, and then the adding of a big-time hockey name to the front office as well in John Davidson. So Paul Hamilton joining us. His appearance brought to you by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Not bad, you know. A day of news for the hockey team on, just a random Monday in July 13th. And The Krebs extension got done. You know, you'd said many times the idea that, you know, that could get done before they get to arbitration. You know, a player will elect to go to arbitration. That just kind of keeps things, keeps the two parties together. It's kind of like a franchise tag, right? Like, you don't have to sign it. It means that there's contact up until a deadline. And lo and behold, here we are, a four-year, $4.5 million deal for Krebs.
Yeah, and many felt maybe he would get a $3.5-4 million deal, but I think the comparable that you looked at was Jack Drury's contract. You know, with Nashville, he also set career high in goals and points, but he had 10 goals and 17 assists for 27 points. Krebs did better than that. He had 12 goals and 27 assists for 39 points and is 1 year younger. So, you know, when Drury wound up getting, you know, $4.5 million for a five-year deal, I think that was kind of what they, you know, they looked at and decided, you know what, you know, let's go with that, and they did.
Do you think, Paul, that Krebs is kind of just wherever we need him going into the season? We've talked about that with you about, you know, you might make lines today and maybe he would be on your fourth line, but how much of his value is they would feel wherever we would need to put him if we run into injuries, we feel comfortable putting him?
Well, right now they have two extra players. So whether, you know, you're probably going to get injuries in training camp. So you may not have to do anything, you know, but the way you probably are going to be looking at it is one extra defenseman, one extra goaltender, and one extra forward, which means you probably will have to drop two forwards. You can do it very easily, and I'm not suggesting they do this. I would not do it, but you can go the very easy route. There's two guys that don't need waivers. That's Ostlund and Helenius, and you can send them both down and bring them back when somebody gets hurt or whatever. That's the easy way out. Everybody else, you know, you either got to trade somebody or put them on waivers to send them down. Unless they have horrendous training camps, that's not my move. You know, I would have Ostlund and Helenius both in my lineup. Yeah. But they got it. They do have to. I think it's going to wind up being two forwards that they're going to have to figure out to do something with if everybody stays healthy throughout.
Yeah, Paul, as you mentioned that as an idea, I mean, I feel like the Sabres have won their fans back and gotten them engaged. And if we get to opening night and we're told that, you know, Helenius and Ostlund, it's a numbers game, there's going to be a problem, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There is. Especially since they, you know, lost Tuck, and they could have kept Tuck if they so desired. You could have figured this out if you wanted to keep him. You've got $4.2 million to play with right now. If, you know, he makes $10.5 million, you'd have to find $6 million from somewhere. But I think that could have easily be done because, again, you'd be two guys to be off the roster,
yeah.
Whoever that might be, and you can take McLeod's $5 million easily out of there, and you know, Ostlund can take his spot easily.
Paul, do you think there's any sort of calculus to, as we talk about Malenstein and Krebs both being like fairly well paid fourth liners, that the Sabres might look at the way that they are built in the present day and think, well, we want to keep the group of forwards together, and while sure, you might be able to get somebody to do that job for $2 million, we're a team that isn't paying anybody at forward $11, $12, $15. We don't have to go basement shopping for fourth liners, so we're in a position to pay it well, and we want to be the best fourth line in hockey. I mean, like, I feel like that's not something you'd ever shoot for, but in the short term, I'm not making a case for it. I wonder if you think there's any calculus behind that.
Well, I think you look at it to the player itself. Who are we talking about, if you're the Sabres? Who are we thinking about? Who are we talking about? What does Beck Malenstein do for us? How much is that worth to us, that to what he does? Same thing with Carrick. What does he do? What does he bring to the table? What does Danforth bring to the table? I mean, Danforth only played four games last year.
You know, he's at 1.8 million. You know, and they were expecting obviously more from him before he broke his kneecap. So, you know, those, that's what you're basically looking at is Carrick, Danforth, and Malenstein, you know, to be that line for you. All right, where does Krebs go? Again, well, where's Helenius and where's Ostlund? What are you doing with them? You know, where are you going with them? Where's Kulik? Is he going to be up top with Thompson? Are you just going to slide Krebs in with them? You know, and just to start, if everybody's healthy, which again, before everybody panics here about what we're talking about, the chances of everybody being healthy on opening night are not all that good. I mean, everybody we're looking at right now, I'd be shocked if everybody is healthy. That's just not the way sports goes, especially through training camp. So it probably is not going to be a problem they're going to have to deal with, but it could be.
I think it is, though, Paul, getting this a little bit in the first hour, it is an example, though, that their depth is so strong that, like, you've talked about the Larkin trade. You could rewind to the Tuck deal if you want. You could go to any of these other big ideas that they were and even still are in a position this offseason to say, okay, this is an upgrade at forward, but it might cost us two guys in a deal or anything of that sort, because we haven't even mentioned Kozak. You mentioned Danforth there a little bit. Like, I feel like if you had to plug in a couple guys that make $1 million on your fourth line in the name of I'm getting a great player like a Larkin at the top of my lineup, I can do that because I have so many forwards that would feel comfortable playing in my lineup night to night.
Yeah, right now I've got them two extra guys and around $4.2 million to play with. You know, and does that mean Kane? Does that mean player X that isn't even been talked about? I mean, there can be a trade here for a player that nobody's heard of that's going to be traded. You know, that all of a sudden is traded. I'm trying to think back. When Jeff Skinner was traded to the Sabres, was there a lot of talk about that before it happened? You know, that was an August trade, if I'm not mistaken. I think the first week in
August.
It was.
Yep, it was.
You know, I don't know if that was discussed a lot before it happened. So there could be a guy that we don't even know that there's a negotiation going on right now and winds up here. So,
but guys would have to go out if that's going to happen, right? Like, are they signing a Patrick Kane if no other forward is going the other way in some other deal?
You've got three guys that got to go.
Right,
you know,
and waivers.
Or get hurt or something like that. Which is fine. I mean, if you got to waive Danforth or something, you didn't have them all last year. I know Lindy Ruff likes him a lot. But is he going to get claimed?
Right.
I don't know.
It still just does feel like there is a lot of potential for a trade, right? Like, they don't have to make one because, like you said, like the odds of everybody being healthy are not super, super high. But they have a surplus, and you might be looking at ideas that would turn a surplus into an upgrade in other places.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and we don't know if they're looking at a trade themselves. You know, for one of the guys we're talking about, is there somebody interested in Danforth? You know, that you can get something for him to move him along. Or, you know, now I know Lindy Ruff likes him a lot, and you know you got a guy in Davidson who would like him a lot too, because you know he used to be in Columbus, so. You know, that group of folks who are in the front office would like him too. You know, as far as the D goes, I think you're set that you've got your seven. It's got to come from the forwards because it's going to be three goalies. It's going to be 7D, and that's what you got. You've got 7D, and you got three goalies. But the problem is right now you've got five full lines. Mm-hmm. Somebody might say, well, Kozak is a nice player, but If you waive them, and if somebody claims them, then somebody claims them, and you move on. I can listen to that. I mean, I like Kozak myself a lot. But, if everybody is here and you need to make a move and you happen to lose him, then you happen to lose him.
Paul, back on Peyton Krebs for a moment. He only played 11 minutes on the penalty kill last year, but he had done it a little bit more previously in his career. Do you think he could be one of the guys, new deal, tuck out the door that could do that more? I know Doan has come up more for that conversation, right? As someone that didn't really penalty kill last year that could be involved in it.
The reason Doan came up is Lindy Ruff brought him up.
Right.
You know, in his last press conference, but at the end of the year, that he would like to start getting him some penalty killing time. Lindy Ruff obviously at that point knew that maybe the chances of Tuck being back are slim to none. He would know at that point where negotiations are and where they're headed. So he might have already known that he's down a very good penalty killer. And Alex Tuck, who's one of the best there is. Greenway is also one of the best in the league. You're down two excellent penalty killers. So I would think Doan, for sure, will be given an opportunity. I think Krebs will probably be given an opportunity. Benson, more of an opportunity. He got some. As the year went on, he got more opportunity to kill penalties. Danforth, if he's in the lineup, I think would be a penalty killer. Carrick, if he's in the lineup, would be a penalty killer. Kozak, if he's in the lineup, be a penalty killer. Ostlund can be a very good penalty killer. If Ostlund's dressed, I think he's also a guy that I would think Doan and Ostlund might be the two guys that would get the most time, you know, moving forward.
Paul Hamilton. Paul, there was a minor league trade of swap of players. I wouldn't expect you to have like a spicy take on it. If you want to throw something on it, you can. Tyler Kopf to Washington. The Sabres get Zach Funk. But the other part of it is, of course, John Davidson joining the front office, which I don't know, Paul, when Kevin Adams was here, he's kind of operating by himself, right? There's not a big support staff, and Yarmo has really built out a complete front office, it seems.
No, he has, definitely. I mean, he's got another guy who had been a GM for double-figure years. And, you know, so and as far as the trade goes, it's an obvious American Hockey League trade. Neither player have ever played in the NHL, probably never will. Matter of fact, both spend a lot of time in the East Coast League. And I'm not saying nobody in the East Coast League ever plays in the NHL, but it's rare. Let's put it that way. I think there would have to be a number of injuries before Zach Funk would wind up in the lineup.
Yeah. Like 15, 10. I don't know. I don't know. The one thing I noticed, there's a piece here about it's maybe from a Caps fan site, that Kopf was a bit of a fighter and also he and Josh Dunn, I guess, like, you know, how does a trade like that happen? One GM calls up and says, like, hey, I was thinking about this guy. Like, oh, yeah, sure, just throw me down the list, this guy.
Yeah.
All right, done. See ya. Right? Like, these, all due respect to the players. I mean, like, a deal like this is probably one that's
easier to make than, like, a Hellebuck trade.
Yeah, your AHL GMing thinking, we could use a little bit of size that, you know, down in our affiliate. So
exactly. You do have to. I know a lot of people get upset, you know, on July 1st. It's like, well, why are you signing Jason Poulin? It's like, well, easy. They do have to bring Rochester people in. They do have to sign players for the Rochester Americans. So don't get all bent out of shape because it's like, yeah, but we wanted a guy. Yeah, fine, but you do have to bring guys in. So, you know, in this case, they just felt Zach Funk fits what they're trying to do in Rochester a little bit better than Compton, and they made the deal.
By the way, speaking of Rochester, you said earlier that Ostlund and Hellenius are eligible to be sent down. Is Kulik need waivers at this point? Not that I think he would be a guy, but if they said we want to get him a couple hockey games at the beginning of the year because he missed all that time, is he eligible?
I didn't even think. I just look him up.
As we're talking,
I can look it up. But
I believe
he can go down without waivers. But
okay.
As I said, I'll look it up as we're talking here.
It appears. It appears he can. So, not that I'm, you know, forcing that in. But if everybody's healthy and they thought he could use a game or two, they could do that in the preseason, right? So,
but what if he has an awful training camp?
I mean, you know, if he doesn't earn it and he's not playing well at all, and you know, they look at it and say, well, you know what, maybe it'd be a good idea if we send him down there and let him get his legs, so to speak. So, you know, he's only 22 years old, and he is exempt. Yes, so he can go down.
Mm-hmm. All right, Paul.
Opening night gets announced tomorrow.
That's right.
Do you have a preference? Who do you want?
Canadians.
Yes.
Montreal.
Wait, would they take over the building? Would we have to immediately have an identity crisis about that?
No.
I want to be careful.
You know that better than I do, ticket holder and everything. You would have a better
I'm not getting rid of my tickets. Not opening night. That's a great night to be there. And they're raising a banner.
Yeah, no, they wouldn't take over the building.
Maybe Montreal wants to come and take a look at that banner. Yeah, I feel like they got the scoreboard.
Yeah.
Thank you, Paul.
Take care, guys.
Paul Hamilton on the Western Hotline on the Sabres. Three moves yesterday. But I mean, John Davidson, he was the GM of the Blues when they signed McKee, right? Way back when. He's been around forever. I feel like, what years is he on television?
Oh, I don't remember him on TV. Oh. I remember him in the Rangers front office. And
he's been around. Do you know how old John Davidson is? 80.
I was going to say 72.
Wrong one. There's a different John Davidson that I just checked. I'll find his career here because, man, he's just been everywhere.
Yeah, and he played, right? He was a goalie.
Yeah. Yeah, he's with
way back when, with the plastic masks.
Yeah. Another goalie guy. Good for the brand. Good for the goalie brand. Mm-hmm. He was the interim GM when Yarmo got fired in Columbus. So, no hard feelings there.
Okay.
Broadcasting career. He did games, color commentator for the Rangers from 1987 to 2006.
Wow.
Yeah.
20 years?
Yeah.
Really? He wasn't working in front offices for all that time?
Oh, okay. Paul, he didn't go away. Hey, Paul, you're back. John Davidson also, NHL on Fox from 94 to 99, the 96 World Cup of Hockey. He did OLN and NBC, all the NBC branches.
Yeah.
So he was around for the Glow Puck.
I'm surprised I don't remember him.
He's also featured in the EA Sports video game NHL 97. I mean, he's been everywhere.
Okay.
Paul, what do you got on John Davidson?
Two guys in NHL history have worn the number 00. They are now both in the Sabre organization.
Marty Baron and John Davidson.
There you go.
Really?
Yep. Marty put that out there yesterday.
Nice. I like it. Thanks, Paul. Good. Yep. There's your stat of the day.
Yeah.
Paul Hamilton delivering the stat of the day. Thanks, Paul. Mm-hmm. Stat of the day brought to you by Jan Smoke Shop 2 and Gas Mart, where everything about Jan Smoke Shop is smoking.
77-78 in New York, he wore 00.
What's the case against 00? What's wrong with it? Is it only that you don't do 01, 02, 03? Like, what's the...
I guess. Because you do have zeros in football and basketball, but we don't even have single zeros in hockey.
No, you do in football now.
Yeah, football, basketball have them.
This the 00 conversation reminds me of, I was thinking of an idea for the next 2 weeks of a segment called like Summer Takes, like Summer Good, Summer Bad, like the joke about summer teeth. Anyway, Summer Takes, mm-hmm. Summer Good, Summer Bad, because you never know what might set one of us off.
Uh-huh.
What had me thinking this was, what was the golf tournament we just watched? Like the American Century Club Championship or whatever that was?
The one at Tahoe?
Yes.
Tahoe, yeah.
Which uses the Stableford scoring system.
Oh, yeah, I hate it.
And, I was just going to say.
So stupid.
I was watching that, and I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to bring up the Stableford scoring system and see if Joe or Owen or Joe
just
wants to yell about something.
It's the dumbest thing ever. Why? We're just, nobody watching it knows what's happening. Or who's winning.
They put it on the screen. They put the points up.
Count it normal.
Just for everybody at home, we're using the Stableford scoring system.
It feels like something hockey would do.
It's definitely different. Did some guy just say, like, hey, guys, I got an idea. What if we do this instead? Which, you know, it rewards, it makes birdies way more, way more better. Then bogeys are bad. A birdie is three.
Yeah.
A bogey is one.
You get a point for a bogey, yeah, which also is dumb.
You get a point for a bogey, but you get a get three for a... I got to dig into this.
Why wouldn't it be a par? A par? Well, I guess
a this par is the, two.
Right. Instead of a par is zero.
So one, two, three. An eagle is four. An albatross is six. I guess, no, really, there's not anything better.
No, right. Like, that's still, like, if in a golf score, if we're playing regular golf and I birdie and you bogey, what's the difference on the
two.
Score sheet?
It's, you're right. Two. It's two.
What's the difference in the Stableford?
It's two.
Two.
You're what? Right. In traditional Stableford, an albatross is six. Imagine announcing
that's the thing.
You announced that at the tournament. Hey, guys, if you get an albatross, it's six. Oh, okay. I bet that's happened once this decade in this tournament. Good thing. Yeah. Why not make it worth 100?
And the other thing it does, isn't it, is that double bogeys are worse or all the same?
Yes.
So it's basically like if you get a quadruple
just
bogey.
Just pick up your ball.
You just pick it
Wait
up.
Wait a minute. Double bogey or worse is all the same. Maybe we should all be playing the Stableford.
Once, yeah, like basically, okay, you're putting for double, pick it up.
Right.
You're not. We all move quicker.
You're not putting an eight on your card. That's not happening. No triples.
Because really, nobody wants a 10 on the score. Like,
nobody.
Not even like if I'm playing with a foursome and one of my buddies is like putting for nine. I don't feel comfortable.
Okay, wait.
Maybe I'm making fun of
there's
the person
a modified this, Stableford. This is better. Used in some.
There's multiple Stableford.
This one is used in the Barracuda Championship. Maybe this is used in the Century Club as well. Albatross 8, eagle 5, birdie 2, par 0, bogey minus 1. So that is one that rewards birdie more than it punishes bogey.
I think I like that one better.
Sure.
They use that where?
This is, as I'm reading, in the Barracuda Championship, maybe. There's a modified system. Anyway, been the segment Summer Takes. Just trying to, you know, drop a phrase and see if one of you guys can get furious about something.
Is Josh Allen playing in this tournament this year? At Tahoe? This is not the combined event, is it?
Not the Pro-Am.
This is not the Pro-Am.
The Pro-Am that's usually at Pebble Beach, right?
Yeah, but isn't there a big Tahoe?
Whatever one they played at this weekend, there were boats pulled up to the green. Did you see that? The green is there, and then a sandy beach, and then there were boats and pop-up tents for people tailgating off of their boats at the golf green this last weekend.
Hmm.
Not the Scottish Open.
They have the as this was one day ago. Part of the Tahoe week is they have the celebrity tournament. Marty Fish, former tennis player, won.
Marty Supreme.
He beat Joe Pavelski.
That's not Marty Supreme, right? That's a different Marty.
No, this is Marty. Not Marty.
Oh.
Marty.
I should have heard that. Sorry.
He beat Joe Pavelski.
Tough one.
Big rivalry, those two. Marty Fish and Joe Pavelski.
Pavelski could just never get over the top.
And Steph Curry was third.
Wait, did he? Did he win? Did Pavelski win with Dallas?
Win the cup?
Yeah.
Dallas never, not recently, okay. Has won
he didn't
the
win it with San
didn't
Jose.
Win it with San Jose.
And he didn't win, and he didn't win that tournament.
No.
Tough one. 803-0550. And 1-888-550-2550. When we return, the message the guy for the that got thrown into the air by the Buffalo has for the Buffalo.
Okay.
That's next. Jeremy and Joe on WGR.